Okay, welcome back to episode 174. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Well, this week we agreed to talk about the World Economic Forum. Of course, we'll talk about the Great Reset, I think, and also the broader picture, or you know, what are these organizations or confabs really mean, and what's their significance? But there's been some interesting developments along the pandemic COVID-19 front. We were just discussing off call that there was a restaurant that was hit with $1,000 in fines for reopening, was found not guilty. This was in Pennsylvania, a Pennsylvania restaurant that was hit with nearly $10,000 in state citations for reopening their business in defiance of Democrat Governor Tom Wolf's coronavirus restrictions, was found not guilty after months of continuing to fight against the administration. Taste of Sicily in Lebanon County attracted the support of several local officials over the decision to reopen their restaurant in May after having initially shut down for 2 months in obedience with state orders. The restaurant left it up to customers to decide whether or not they want to wear masks or social distance and was cited for violating Wolf's restrictions. So that's interesting because that's even talking about all the social distancing rules, the mask requirements. The restaurant, which was co-owned by siblings Michael Mangano and Christine Wortluft, was found not guilty. Their lawyers, Eric Winter, told the Daily Caller that Wolf's and the Department of Health's orders couldn't be punished under the Pennsylvania criminal law. It's very questionable as to whether the law allows the Department of Health to issue orders as it did. It is not possible for a criminal penalty to be imposed for violating the orders, he told the caller. Wolf had fixated his attention on Lebanon County and the Republican leadership supporting small businesses like Taste of Sicily that defied state orders. Wolf decided to withhold $13 million in funding from the county on July 17th, leaving it the only county in the state to have been cut off from the $625 million package of coronavirus relief funds. So there's Wolf's retribution. The mask mandate, the plexiglass, the social distancing, all those things that the governor and the Secretary of Health, Rachel Levine, by the way, Rachel Levine is a man pretending to be a woman. That's your, That's the Secretary of Health in Pennsylvania, we're implementing are not enforceable citations, Megana tells the caller. In other words, they can't legally enforce that. This says that any fine that you get from the state is legally non-enforceable. Mangano's advice for other businesses facing fines from the state for reopening prematurely or for not fully following state guidelines is to stand up and plead not guilty. When you get these fines from these agents, do not pay them. Plead not guilty and take them to court. As you can see, we won because they had no legal right to fine us for those mandates and guidelines for the governor Levine implemented. You have to stick together and go to court. In September, a federal judge ruled that Wolf's gathering restrictions and shutdowns of non-essential businesses during the coronavirus pandemic was unconstitutional. So the governor, the head of the state in Pennsylvania, is in breach of the Constitution, which is the charter document for the government of the state of Pennsylvania. So, what legitimacy does he have? He's a violation of his own charter. The business closure components of the orders also violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which requires the state to govern impartially and treat individuals in the same manner as others in similar conditions and circumstances. So it's a violation of the 14th Amendment. So where is the Justice Department? So that's an interesting story.
Yeah, and it's a very important one. I've been trying and failing in three different towns to get a collection of businesses to all open at once. Mm-hmm. Because the idea being that if you could have in one county, say, I was trying to get like 30 businesses to open at one time, I thought that they would be able to expose exactly what that trial had done, that they would all be fined and they would then get one attorney to represent the whole lot, so that'd be easy to afford the attorney. And then they would win in court, because I felt that Newsom's his directions to shut down all these small businesses was unconstitutional by the state of California Constitution. And I was also making the case that what do you have to lose? Yes. You know, the businesses had been shut down. That I've been trying to do this for like 3 months. So after 4 months, the businesses were starting to collapse. You know, you'd see these lists of businesses that would not reopen under any condition. And that list was the one I was trying to work, was the, you know, the people who had already said that we're not going to open up again. I was saying, look, since you have no business, have you considered this idea? And I wasn't able to get any enough traction to get it going. But hopefully when the second lockdown comes, which I think it will, right, with the coming winter flu season and the rationale to keep us locked down basically stronger than ever in terms of the secret society that rules the government, there will be more businesses getting to that point of just complete desperation, and taking the position that what do we have to lose? And if enough of them will try this approach, I think they could, even though, as we talked about this last week, you know, in the Supreme Court they'll lose because that's Masonic controlled. But at the lower courts, they will win. And this will, in the process, they will be able to get information to the public. So that's very valuable.
Yeah. And if you create a groundswell of support and people to start ignoring these orders, it might fall apart by that, and it won't be appealed up to the Supreme Court as the narrative collapses. There is this is in Illinois, restaurants say they'll defy state ban on indoor service. Some suburban restaurants say they will defy Illinois Governor Pritzker's order reinstating COVID-19 restrictions, suspending indoor dining and bar service, a state order that is to take effect Friday in Will, DuPage, Kane, and Kankakee counties. The Stagecoach Eatery and Saloon in Lockport says on Facebook, it's not trying to be rebellious. It wants people to wear masks, whatever. But owners say its decision to continue with indoor dining is one of survival. So that's people have to understand. More than 30 employees depend on the restaurant for their livelihoods, and outdoor dining is not viable. Is not a viable option, the Post said. Yeah, eating in the wintertime in Illinois, isn't that outside? Isn't that comfortable? Even in the summer? I mean, it's like...
iced daiquiri and a banana split, you know, and just...
It pointed out heaters are not allowed within 20 feet of outdoor tents due to fire codes. Meanwhile, a couple of DuPage County restaurants, Kai Steak and Seafood in Glendale Heights, and Italian Pizza Kitchen in Rosa. It's just amazing how many, just hundreds of thousands, millions of small businesses that people rely on just for the livelihood. You don't think about it until something like this happens. They call Pritzker a dictator. It's appropriate. Both say on Facebook they are standing up for their freedom. They say they respect people who wish to stay at home but hope people support them. The restaurant's Facebook post have had hundreds of responses, most seemingly in favor of the defiance of the governor's order. I'm surprised Facebook hasn't taken those down. not supporting the narrative. So that's a sign of, again, just not putting up with it. And again, that's, again, if they get fined or cited, they take these SOBs to court. And that's what you got to do. I'm sorry. It's like, what, are you going to starve to death? You know, there's a case, well, New York, I think I just heard a report that apparently police raided a home of, I guess, they're Orthodox Jews. Found there are more than 10 people there, and it was declared unlawful under de Blasio's and Cuomo's orders. And I think the police entered under the pretext there was a parking violation outside, but they saw inside there were more than 10 people. So these police showing up looking like idiots with their masks on, bothering these Orthodox Jews that are meeting. And so, again, this is the case where these Jews get together to sue the pants off the city, the state. They should go after de Blasio and Cuomo personally, because, again, these people aren't, these governors and these mayors are in violation of their oaths of office and their state constitution. This is a direct assault on the right to peaceful assembly. And there is no clause in the Constitution that says due process, and our rights are not suspended because...
Or a pandemic occurs, therefore the Constitution is in abeyance.
There's nothing there. And, of course, as the backdrop of all this is the fake pandemic, you know.
Right, and I was going to mention, I don't know if you saw the article, Only Poison Monkey Cells Grew the Virus.
Really?
Yeah, it was Rappaport cited it in one of his columns, but the actual article is simply probably the most important technical article that's come out.
Well, this is where they put a bunch of poison, like chemicals, and they call that the virus, right? Because it gets a
Right. Well,
reaction. Yeah.
it's at, you know me, I don't like to go into the scientism, but I think here it's not a bad idea because it's so important. I think people might find this of interest. I mean, the first thing is that the article was written by a virologist, a guy who actually knows all about,
Was
the
this Dr. Cowan?
cost of, pardon?
Was this Dr. Cowan?
Yes, Dr. Cowan,
Okay,
yeah.
yeah.
And so he wrote, he researched the CD. CDC's documentation of the way that they were able to identify the SARS-CoV
Oh, the
virus.
sequencing, which is like pulled out of a hat or something, yeah.
Well, what happened was is they what he found is that they in the actual article that detailed that if you were able to understand the scientism, because they use a lot of sort of unique terms, and it was a little hard for a layperson to go through the thing and really understand it, but he pointed out that they had actually found, or claimed to have found, only 37 so-called base pairs. And these are just chains of DNA or RNA that they thought were related to the virus. There are 30,000 base pairs inside of an intact virus, but they had 37 of them. And they said, well, no problem. We will be able to create the nature of the SARS virus using computer simulation. And I'm not kidding. And this is
Garbage
actually
in,
what
garbage out.
they did.
Okay.
So they created basically a CGI, a computer generated image of a virus that was completely constructed by a computer.
So it's the same way that, say, Steven Spielberg created dinosaurs.
100%. I mean, and the virus is exactly as real as this because, I mean, Cohen just absolutely lambasted it. He just said this is. He actually said, "Look," he said, "this is scientific fraud," which I think is pretty, strong language for a peer-reviewed type PhD guy to go. But he actually said, "Look, it's just out and out scientific
Well,
fraud."
he's not going to get any Fauci grants.
No, I don't think so. I think Gates will be at his door with like $10 million. But in any case, so he the So the virus is only a theoretical event. It's just something that a computer created. Now, from there, they were able to create the PCR, the test to detect it. But this is just more hocus pocus because they were looking for in the test. Genetic sequences which could be present in anyone around the world. And they were, again, it's scientism, but if the more times you cycle the PCR, the more
Yeah.
virus comes forward and the larger and larger, basically the genetic material you get to choose from to see if you have a positive result. But the PCR test is just as fraudulent. Because it's obviously not looking for a real virus. It's just being the test is designed to detect a particular genetic sequence, but it is not net one that is necessarily related only to the one virus, which is self-evident because the virus that it would be relating to doesn't actually exist. Okay, so the going forward, what is really fascinating is so now you have the question of, well, all of this vaccine studies that have been done. I mean, they've got I don't know how many billions poured in. They keep saying they're about to release it. They keep mentioning that a few people die every once in a while from we're being tested, but overall, it's going really well. But what are they actually creating in the virus to prevent the existence of a computer simulated virus? They don't have any virus. They don't see my point is they can't possibly have any actual so-called SARS-CoV isolated virus that they can be testing the vaccine on. I mean, that is literally impossible. So what I think they're doing is simply computer simulation of genetic relationships. Now, if that is true, then this is just terrifying because you can see that there is just this thin veil of pretext about what they're coming up with being some kind of vaccine. I mean, it's just something that is relating to data that they have created concerning the nature of genetics. And it's the virus genetics and the human genetics and the interplay between the two, which they are trying to, according to their press releases, they're trying to defend the human DNA from the virus DNA. But they don't have real viruses to test against this idea. So I would say that humans should resist with everything they've got a virus, excuse me, a vaccine, which has as its premise genetic modification of a human to prevent a real it that the human's relationship and an infection by a simulated genetic construction of a virus. I mean, it's just they can't possibly have any actual evidence of the virus preventing someone from getting the real virus because that isn't even something that's being tested.
Yeah, and as it was revealed a couple of weeks ago, the CDC doesn't even have an isolate of SARS-CoV-2. So how are
Yeah,
they?
and Tim, they never will. I don't think they will. I doubt it. I mean, obviously, if they were going to have one, they could have had it 100 times over by now. But it is just so much easier for them to manipulate a mythical germ than one that could actually get out and cause trouble. And I mean, who knows what it might do that they wouldn't want. When they have one that doesn't exist and they just use the media to create fear, and then, as we've seen over and over again, they just then define all of these different natural or deaths by other causes as COVID deaths. They can create one state isn't in obedience. Like I noticed that they're upset about Wisconsin. They can immediately bump up the death rate. They can certainly bump up the infection rate at any time they choose because there is nothing about it that is relating to reality. Everything is a computer simulation, it seems at this to me at this point.
Yeah, and they always have biological or scientific mysticism to beguile or, confuse the public and,
Well, and they get a few intimidating PhDs to attack, people who are asking these questions as conspiracy theorists. And then what are you going to do? Who's going to actually stand up against the eggheads to say, well, where's your virus? Show it to us. Where's the actual evidence? And this Cohen's article is just devastating because remember, they have claimed for since March that they had isolated it, that it had been identified, that the Chinese labs had isolated, purified, and basically they felt that they were, they'd run Koch postulates, and that then when it came into the U.S., they replicated it. Everything is just, completely scientific, but none of that was real.
Well, I know it exists because I saw a picture of it. It's a ball with spikes, right?
Yeah, that's the picture. Which even see the it's part of the process. You isolate, you purify, and then you take electro, kind of these tiny little things get photographed. Well, there are hundreds, I think thousands actually, of coronaviruses. And since they were not taking pictures into a purified, volume of virus, which was of some contestation, but now after Cohen's article, no one can argue that. So what they were doing is they were just taking pictures of unpurified kind of human material, and sure enough, they were finding coronaviruses. But Tim, there are hundreds of coronaviruses, and they all look kind of the same. And then they were just putting the picture up, and well, the public, of course, what are the public going to do? It just recognizes the authority, and is intimidated by, it's a picture in the New York Times, and it's Dr. Rotenberg, who the famous virologist, who's now has taken pictures of it, And I mean, you know, it's funny. Do you remember the picture way back in February in Wuhan of like a couple guys in white smocks and lying on the street was a guy with a mask on and his arms splayed out and he had died of corona, couldn't even make it into the hospital? Do you remember
Yeah,
the
yeah.
photograph?
People collapsing on the street. That's sort of thing, yeah.
And they had a bunch of, well, how, Tim, I mean, your neck of the woods, how many people are collapsing on the street
Well,
these
yeah, that's, you all these, video of police going in, locking door, welding doors and washing fronts of building down with some sort of
Can anyone
solution, yeah.
remember that? The memory of humans is
Yeah.
suspect to me, because remember what it was like in February, March, when they were bringing out all of the horror porn about corona. And it was, you know, the people in the Chinese hospitals that were just overwhelmed. The people are on the street. All of the, you know, they had guys in hat. I mean, hazmat suits were was like the normal fashion in Wuhan. You know, so I mean, tell me, Tim, how many people walk around in hazmat suits in your neck of the woods?
Well, that even happened with the Ebola a scare when they had a guy with there's a photograph of a couple guys with hazmat suits. I
Yeah.
guess this is I guess they're dealing with Ebola patient or to prevent exposure to it. And then but right behind him was a guy like wearing a regular suit and
I
tie.
saw that.
You're like, what?
I mean, this is like the moon landing, except it's more crude. It's just ludicrous how weak the rationale for, you know, this the virus's threat to mankind is.
The another interesting story was Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, his email on his computer that was re the emails that were released and also the photographs supposedly of him engaging in some compromising behavior, drug use, I guess sex, but allegedly with underage girls perhaps. The story was, in fact, that the story got out. Basically, he had dropped off his laptop at a repair shop, never picked it up, and the guy looked into it and found it and turned it over to the FBI. This was last year, more than 12 months ago, and the FBI just sat on it. Of course, this was all during the impeachment fiasco, when President Trump was being impeached for supposedly collusion with Russia and these things. Well, turns out that there's evidence on these emails that Joe Biden is implicated in sort of an international bribery, extortion racket. And Hunter Biden was hired as a to be put on a board of this company in Ukraine called Burisma, and I think he was paid like $83,000 a month or something. He had no experience in the oil, gas, or energy industry, but of course he's the son of the vice president, and apparently he was brought in to I guess use his influence with his father to get policies that were favorable to Burisma. One was firing a prosecutor in the Ukraine, which Joe Biden has openly bragged about. I think he bragged about it at the Council of Foreign Relations, how he got the SOB fired. His words, I think. So, I mean, he's bragged about it, and apparently there's also a deal in China that is worth valued at least $10 million. So apparently, Hunter Biden is some sort of bag man for his father. Perhaps he's getting his beak wet a little bit, and then you have these compromising photos. But of course, this comes, less than 2 weeks away from a presidential election. But the it turns out big tech colluded to suppress it. They actually took down New York Post's a Twitter account for it. They wouldn't allow Facebook wouldn't link to it. So the story became actually well, that they tried initially tried to suppress it, and it did work. But then it got bigger because of the suppression story. It's funny because there are similar reports. I think a few months ago there was a report about Trump's taxes, and so there's an Atlantic article about what Trump might have said about the U.S. military. Of course, none of the fact checkers at Facebook or Twitter bothered to check those stories and keep it from spreading, but they do that for this story. So there's obvious, there's obvious bias in favor of the Biden campaign on part of big tech. So that but one thing what it does this whole thing is how it relates perhaps to the whole the pandemic, the COVID-19 hysteria, the scare is that we get a glimpse into how some of the leading politicians perhaps are compromised because these photographs, if the Chinese or some of the governments are aware of this, this can be used, and also not just governments, but powers that be can be used to get politicians to do their bidding as opposed to representing the people. And so there's compromise, blackmail and bribery is how you control these people. And this might explain why so many politicians, despite the facts, reality, all that, are seem hell-bent on destroying their economies and implementing these lockdowns that are destroying their respective economies, because this is we talked about the destruction of small business, and we're going to talk about the World Economic Forum. Well, their great plan, the Great Reset, depends on the destruction of legacy economies. They want to do away with capitalism and bring in this new system that they envision. And this is where a scandal like this gives us perhaps a glimpse into one way they control our managerial political class.
Yeah, I hate to say it, Tim, and I know you're going to be shocked, but I'm a cynic here. I look at this as like the Wiener laptop, kind of redo. If you recall during the like Hillary Trump, at the end you had the laptop that Wiener had, which had all of the pictures of the crazed. Acts, a lot of them supposedly would have Hillary involved with them. He had some kind of a file called insurance. There was rumors about this, and everyone was waiting for the laptop to emerge. And now we get this one, which kind of is a like a redo. I think that in this broad psychological matrix. The Q thing is being sort of manipulated. They have Q, QAnon makes Trump seem important to a certain group of people. And I think that that's a psychological technique that they're just creating, passion in the dialectic. So you're just passionately for Trump. And you are passionately opposed to Biden. Biden is linked into, degenerate behavior, just like Hillary was. And the QAnon sort of rumor mill just goes overboard. And so now you lose focus on the fact that Trump and Biden are controlled by the same group. So that's my take on it. Now, to your point that. That if any of the laptops ever actually come to public, and we find these kind of photographs, I think you're absolutely right. I think these things do exist, and I think that a certain tier of our politicians have to be controlled, either by money or by blackmail for degenerate behavior. So I just think that's self-evidence. I think at the top, at the presidential race level. They use that as, with different kinds of structures, different psychological maneuvers to keep us, believing in the reality they've given us, which of course is fake. I mean, if there's one thing that COVID, I think, reveals more and more, is that the political class in total is rotten. I mean, it's infected. That's where the infection is. And it's infected with by the secret society, by the when we talk about the World Economic Forum, we'll see that all of these groups, these dynamo capitalism groups and NGOs, that just spring out of nowhere, and secret societies, they all seem to have the same DNA. And we'll talk about this later, that no matter what angle they come from or what version of the workers' paradise they sell, they all have connections back to Jewish banking families. They are all Zionists, and they're all advocates of world government. And the world government they advocate isn't, world democracy. It would be, a government by specialists who are appointed by experts that are coming from the NGO. And then when you look in back at the NGO, you see the banking families. So, you know, that's my take is that, you know, I mean, it has been an interesting week, Tim, because I thought there would be much more rioting. It's actually been relatively calm. And I wanted to mention something. I wanted to, I got a number of listeners contacting me and saying, look, you know, you're talking about Portland as though it's been destroyed because, you know, they've had this 140 days of demonstrations. And they said, actually, that's just a small part of the city and the rest of the city is intact. They sent me evidence of this and I stand corrected. I think it's hard enough just as it is with the lockdown for these businesses, you know, to try to get going again without any, you know, anything other than just completely accurate information. It's hard, and I'm sure you've had this problem too, Tim. I mean, you know, here in my living room, it's a little hard to do world news.
Well, that's why you need to subscribe to Time Magazine.
Well, that's right. And I have New York Times, but I do try to get as much information as I can. But when I'm you know, in this instance, I was quite fascinated to see how small an area, you know, the actual violence had occurred within. I will point out, though, I have to be honest, that in the area that, you know, they had this day of rage and they went after, you know, historical statues and things. One deli reported the deli was that the what broke the windows wasn't just the Antifa's, you know, like bricks, but gunfire. They shot through the. So, I mean, I would say if you're going to Portland, know what part of the town to go into, because it seems like there are areas where there's, you know, I don't want to say autonomous zones, but it just, there is strong influence of Antifa. But then the vast majority of Portland seems to be intact. What they're saying is the real problem with Portland is the lockdown.
Yeah. I would imagine that would be, it's more, much more prosaic because it's just like people not working. And of course the deleterious effect of people not being able to work and the long-term effect of that, whereas the sporadic riots, these flashpoints are there, not just they do their fair amount of destruction, but that's just there for that's psychological warfare.
Yes, that's my I agree completely. Yeah,
yeah.
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 But so World Economic Forum, I mean, what is it, Tim? Where does it come from? You sure hear a lot about its the different aspects, its programs, its agendas. You know,
The World Economic Forum is an international organization headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, that brings together its membership on a yearly basis to discuss the major issues concerning the world political economy. Heady stuff. I mean, these must be the best and the brightest. These include, but are not limited to, issues of politics, economics, social, and environmental concerns. So, well, there's a lot that can be done with those issues. The organization is funded through its own membership, which includes industry leaders, politicians, thinkers, academics, and as well as celebrities, interested individuals. So it's, I would say it's very much like Bilderberg, as you could say. Each year, the World Economic Forum holds its annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland, drawing important world leaders and thinkers. World Economic Forum's membership features a cross-section of representatives from the private and public sector and includes some of the most prominent CEOs, ambassadors, public figures, media personnel, government officials, religious leaders, and union representatives from around the world. So not much opportunity for mischief there, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Founded in 1971, the current World Economic Forum has a mission based on what is known as stakeholder theory. That's interesting. It's probably just, you know, some form of collectivism. Stakeholder theory offers a proposal that while a private sector entity's role is to increase profits for its shareholders, is contingent upon an organization to view the rest of society as having a stake in the company's actions. That's kind of self-evident. The fact that you have to say that, you have to call it that. Stakeholders such as employees, customers, and the company serves in the local and global community are to be considered making key decisions. Yeah, so it's sort of a backdoor way of sort of a workers' collectivism or whatever. They just broaden it out to, it's, I guess, an excuse to meddle in the affairs of companies and all that. Well, Chris. It's also known as Davos because that's where it's held, of course. They claim that their goal is to engage the foremost political, business, and cultural other leaders of society to shape global, regional, and industry agendas. That's according to its website. They meet each year. The World Economic Forum meetings are serve the purpose of introducing new issues, trends, and organizations to members and to the public for discussion, and believed to help evolve corporate public sector agendas for future decision making. The World Economic Forum also produces research into areas of interest to its members and helps to guide public, private sector collaboration and communication among its membership. So a lot can be achieved there. About 3,000 business and political leaders were to attend Davos in 2020. Reuters reported ahead of the January event, past attendees have included Bill Gates, Prince William, Mark Benioff, George Soros, according to the BBC, global pop icon Shakira, actors Forest Whitaker, Matt Damon, JP Morgan Chase, CEO Jamie Dimon, and other the former Alibaba chairman Jack Ma have also attended in the past, New York Times reported. How do they get there? Well, attendees attend only by invitation only, according to CBS News. So that's kind of a breakdown of the World Economic Forum. Of course, interesting enough, the World Economic Forum was a key sponsor, along with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, of the Event 201 exercise, that war game or tabletop exercise, a coronavirus pandemic. This was in October 2001. And lo and behold, a few months later, we have a declared pandemic by the World Health Organization, another organization that is tied to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So that's kind of their stated purpose. It seems to me the world, this is just one of these gatherings or confabs or organizational get-togethers that the elite get together. They all presume to run the world, and they try to do that. They end up causing a lot of pain and suffering because of that. And they get together and they meet, they rub elbows again with all these people, celebrities, journalists, government officials, leaders of industry, finance, banking. Like I said, a lot of opportunity for mischief in that gathering, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they're nothing but opportunities for mischief. The World Economic Forum, it started in 71, and it was the creation of Klaus Schwab. Now,
He's an
this,
interesting figure, right? He's like a Bond villain when he
well,
talks.
he's, yeah, I mean, Bond would be, like, hard to find someone more evil than Klaus Schwab. But so just specifically, he actually comes from Bilderberg. He was one of the steering committee heads, and he was there at the time that I forget who it was. I believe it was Rockefeller who made the famous statement that I forget who. I mean, it wasn't Rockefeller. I'm sorry, my mind's forget. But anyway, one of the Bilderberg guys said, the nations have failed to unify Europe and make things peaceful, so we're going to see if business can do it. I don't know if you recall the statement, but it's very famous, and it was a Bilderberg, one of the the head guys at Bilderberg, and this was at the time then that that Klaus was on the steering committee with this guy, and so then the next year he started the WEF, World Economic Forum. Now, the important thing, if you want to know, well, gee, like this must be a really altruistic group, right? That Klaus is coming from. But however, when you go into the governing council that was there with him at Bilderberg, I don't know if you've ever seen the actual list, but it is you have Robert Ellsworth. Now, he is a administrator of Lazard Frères Bank.
Oh, yeah.
John Lunden. Now, he is a director of MF Rothschild Bank. Paul Nitz, he's from Schroeder Bank. Notice these guys are all, they're all Jewish too, oddly enough. C.L. Schulzberger, the editor of the New York Times. Now you get another guy just happened to come off the street. I don't know how they picked him up. Stanfield Turner, he would become the CIA director.
Oh, okay.
Then you have Andrew Schoenberg. He's my favorite. I think he's with RRIA, the Royal, whatever it is. It's Chatham
House. Oh, yeah, Royal Institute of International Affairs. That was the.
This is Chatham House.
It's the British analog to the Council of Foreign Relations, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's a secret society. It has that famous Chatham House rule where you can't tell anybody who's there or what we've been talking about. And then, of course, you have another sort of altruist who rounds out the board, Henry Kissinger. So when you look at this collection, you can see that Bilderberg looks to be more interested, particularly if you look backwards as to what these individuals, that the banking entities that they're representing, the New York Times with its suppression of the information concerning the Holodomor, obviously Turner, with the CIA. I mean, you're getting into MK Ultra. So it's a rogues gallery. Now, evidently, according to Anginelli, the guy who Club of Rome guy who was the head of Fiat, he said that actually above that was Lord Rothschild and Lawrence Rockefeller. He said they're the guy. He said they actually kind of handpicked the first sort of guys who were going to do the regionalizing of Europe. Now, it's actually the quote comes to me now. It was Anginelli. He said that European integration is our goal, and where the politicians have failed, we industrialists hope to succeed. They certainly have now. So now, when you go to Clauss and come forward, you can see this is the actual background of Davos, which is not really. I don't think it's kind of hard to understand this, because Davos is famous for being the conferences are famous for being dominated by bankers. Mm-hmm. It's always you have people from the financial world that are the most prominent. I mean, they always throw in some, dingbat celebrities, movie actors and stuff. But in general, you have banking families, banking representatives, and then guys like Gates, and people that are just oligarch class. So it's just a collection of oligarchs. It's a collection of people who have obtained money through theft, I would say, is the most common way. And they're supposed to now be creating this workers' paradise. Now, isn't this strange, Tim? Because every time we look at when these groups emerge to present a workers' paradise, it always just seems to end up with slavery, as, for example, now with the lockdown or, with the Bolsheviks. If you look at like the agenda and stuff that the World Economic Forum, they're huge now into they're really promoting just two things right now. If you go to the website, it's kind of fascinating. There's two things that they're really promoting. One is what they call racism and racial injustice. And they have a huge picture of, I call him Lloyd George, but he's actually George Floyd.
George.
They have a picture of him.
Really?
And, yeah, huge picture of him. And then, so you get all of the, you get important things, like COVID affects black people more, and it's racism. I mean, I don't know how the virus does that, how it can figure that out, but black made, articles like women of color are worse affected by U.S. COVID-19 labor shock. Probably true, actually, that point. But anyway, so they focus on the racial reset, where they get rid of kind of the European in this blended lumpen proletariat mob that
they're. Yeah, so the pandemic and the ensuing lockdown, the containment measure, if you will, highlights the problem of white supremacy.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense.
and then they also talk about the future of jobs, which this is pretty, this actually is kind of amusing, because all they talk about is online jobs. The future of work, mm-hmm. is online. This is the thing. It's all online. We're all going to be in this fascinating and fast changing world. You better have an online job. No, I mean, online jobs are the equivalent of, cashless stores in that online jobs can be tracked every single keystroke, right? So the idea of living a free life or a life with any privacy, a privacy in your work, to some extent, is gone, right? They're really promoting the two things. So, it doesn't, in all of the talks we've had, these subjects come up every single time. The technological snooping is your work will be part of the process by which the technological snooping will enter your life. We're looking at, vaccinations that even to have your online job and have any money, you need to have your vaccine work card up to date, which means your DNA will be something that will be monitoring to make sure, I guess, you're not too intelligent. And then, of course, Lloyd George will be everywhere, So, this is the World Economic Forum. It's just a flimsy excuse for the agenda that the banking families have had for hundreds of years.
Yeah, and it's just lo and behold, this pandemic happens, and that gives the pretext for the World Economic Forum's Great Reset to be implemented. This great course, if you want to wonder what the Great Reset is, they have a video you can watch. A lot of the biometric monitoring, 5G rollout, implementation, all the monitoring there, under the guise of pandemic response or containment control, all this involves just 24/7 surveillance. I think is Dan Andrews, the premier of Victoria in Australia, was talking about how people no longer have the freedom of movement, and if they do, they have to be constantly monitored. And of course, this is all possible now because we have all this wonderful technology. So you can put on a biometric wristwatch or something that will not only report where you're going, it will also report your heart rate and your body temperature, and it can report to the authorities whether you're sick or not before you even know you're sick.
It will define if you're sick. You won't even know if you're sick. It'll tell you if you're sick.
Yeah, and it'll tell you where to go, and it's a pretext for quarantining, restrictions, and these things. So they have all these great plans, and they're openly talking about this stuff. And if you think it's conspiratorial, I mean, they said that the pandemic is the opportunity to bring about this great transformation. And of course, it all goes along with the Great Reset and also Agenda 21 and its subset of Agenda 2030. This is everything they're calling for. It's the World Economic Forum that promoted Greta Thunberg last year, about this time last year, when she should have became the Joan of Arc of the environmental movement, the 13-year-old girls lecturing humanity for its sins. It was the World Economic Forum that did that. So that's the type of propaganda they're engaged in.
Like on their site, they have basically a site that talks about the economy, the future of it. Mm-hmm. It's called the Jobs Reset Summit. And, it talks about every single way that you can have a job in which you will be working online, typically in robotics or, some kind. And they have everything is in the future sense, so that the future of cyber security, digital trust. I mean, so obviously this is an area where you can find work. The digital economy and the new value creation, shaping the future of it. So again, they give you all of these concept papers, which are all describing a completely online work environment. There's no other means that economy is created. It's all done through these electronic platforms, shaping the future of financial and monetary systems. It's all, everything, every single job that they're talking about. And this is, it's interesting because you brought up the fact that they are structuring the future by what they are bringing out about through their investments. So they invest in these kinds of workspaces, these kinds of means of production, and that becomes reality. We think that, well, it's the virus, they're responding to this emergency. It's not the case. That they've been working on this for 20 years.
Yeah, that's why they were involved in Event 201. They're shaping the reality.
Yeah.
The perception of the reality. We're given, this is a pageant that's been rolled out.
Yeah.
And so we're given this narrative or story of a pandemic, and this creates the conditions by which their investments will now pay off. And it's like, no, we're just ahead of the curve again. We're just so smart. No, you're changing the reality because you're meeting every year with industry leaders, politicians, you know, mayors, governors, representative industry. These are the people that are implementing the lockdown one way or another. So we wonder why de Blasio or Cuomo or Newsom or Whitmore, or Pritzker has this contempt for the constituents and small business. Well, because this is the part of the Great Reset. You have to destroy these. You have to smash these businesses. The real economy to bring about the Great Reset.
And see, the incrementalism is really important, I think, for people to see. I mean, you know, you have Freemasonry, but then at the end of World War II, you have Bilderberg and the Trilateral Commission. But from there, you get the World Economic Forum. It's just an annex of it, but it has a different name. And whereas the other groups were secretive, this one is a public face. And the public face is part of moving us into a technological slave state. But if you work backwards, you can see that this has been the plan of this group from the very beginning. And that's why, you know, I often talk about the DNA of these organizations. If you look at, you know, Chatham House, Trilateral, you know, Council of Foreign Relations, Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones, I mean, they have different names. But they have the same DNA because you can always, you know, I went through that little, what I regard as sort of the litany, you know, you always get the same world governance with a completely amorphous or non-existence description of how the world governance will be chosen, right? It's typically, if you look at the EU with all of the appointed commissars and whatnot, I think you get a pretty good idea of the world governance, how the world government will be established. It isn't going to be by the proletariat. They're really not going to have much to say about the governing bodies, but there will be world governance. They always support it, and it is, of course, Zionist. You don't ever have where you can bring out the problem with George Lloyd, and this is can be the basis for a complete cultural transformation inside of the United States. But somehow the plight of the Palestinian is not even something that can be discussed. It's something that's literally, non-existence. And this is just the reason I bring this up is just because that's an identifying marker. Mm-hmm. You can see that all of these groups are controlled by the same organization because they have the same representation of the critical facts.
Yeah. And they talk about addressing these crises, these problems, as if they're not playing any part. They don't play any role in actually creating these problems to begin with. Problem, reaction, solution.
Right.
I mean, Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, recently warned that a failure to tackle, you know, these problems, these ills of society during the pandemic, you know, the racism, the rioting, whatever, would exacerbate the risk of violent shocks such as conflicts and revolutions, where they're stoking the flames of revolution. They're creating the conflicts. I mean, we talked about George Soros and the Open Society Foundation, and also the fact that the groups like Black Lives Matter, Antifa, they're being corporately funded. They're sort of being protected by the FBI. So the revolution itself is being managed, by the corporate elite. So it's not a genuine revolution.
Just look at Martin Luther King marching with the Schiff family member, and then knowing that in back of him, one generation is financing the slave trade. So you see a use of propaganda and of the control of the media, because these pictures wouldn't come in front of our minds if they didn't control, you know, CBS, ABC, NBC, you know, New York Times. So the pictures come in front of us, and the pictures are there for a purpose. They're not there to report news. News doesn't exist. It's propaganda. The whole thing is simply propaganda.
Yeah, what they don't realize is that at a time when journalism was less decentralized, there were pockets of, you know, honesty, of genuine journalism, investigative journalism. It's funny because this in the past 10 years has gotten so much worse, because 10 years ago they tried to roll out a swine flu epidemic and CBS News exposed the fraud behind it. That could never happen now. Just recently I heard that for 10 years Forbes magazine had an article about the false swine flu pandemic in 2010, and they had a story about it, and pretty much it was mirrored everything what we're seeing here. It was pretty much the same thing we're seeing with the COVID-19 false pandemic. But just recently, after 10 years of being online, that the article was taken down.
So, yeah, I mean, it's so crude,
you know. But so just in the past 10 years, I think this is why 10 years ago they couldn't roll some things out, because there was still enough resistance. They couldn't buffle it. Maybe they didn't have the measure of control yet that they
could. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I think that the control has increased in the technologic area, because they now have so many cameras, mm-hmm. and snooping devices, and of course the internet, with which they can control the mentality of the herd. I mean, you know, when in 10 years ago there wasn't that constant staring at iPhone. And Tim, just to digress, where did this habit of women taking pictures of themselves staring at an iPhone come from? I mean, it's just
the selfie, right?
It's so weird and narcissistic, and just I just can't understand why someone would do this. But every time I look at the Facebook, there's like thousands of these pictures of women. It's usually women, very rarely men, but they take pictures of themselves, and in front of their face they have the iPhone.
Yes.
Anyway, so the point is that they. You know, it's hard to say why they pulled the trigger now, why they went.
Well, one thing is they're staring into a screen, and you're getting all that information from the screen, all that data, and you're not involved in the outside world. And if you're engaged in the outside world more, you'd see that there is no pandemic. Whereas if you look into the screen, there's a pandemic.
Right. It's a completely pixel, you know, related epidemic. Someone sent me that picture, a couple of pictures from Wuhan that had circulated. I mentioned them earlier, where, you know, you have these people they couldn't even get to the hospital. The COVID had wiped them out. You know, mm-hmm. they had gotten demolished by the virus, and the people in the hazmat suits are like 3 or 4 feet away. They don't even get close up. That was actually influential in the American public's mind in March. This is because there is no filter on the propaganda. The filter, of course, is the independent media and just the general skepticism. But go back. I was looking at, just some collection of information and stories in March. There wasn't anyone, except with the exception, I will say, of you and John Rappaport, who are bringing up the idea, wait a second, is this even real? The fear had been so triggered by the official sounding stories that Wuhan is being wiped out. And then, of course, the horror porn here, you know, where, oh, my God, it's coming. Now it's here. It got someone, you know, just. And then the lockdown happened, and all of this stuff is going so quickly. There's hardly any chance to even analyze it if you're sort of skeptical. But if you're someone who's just getting everything from the screen, you're just being taken right into the slave state and locked down, and you don't even know what hit you.
Yeah, and it realizes the so-called journalists, the people on TV reading you the news, they are paid, and they're paid more to lie to you. And that's just the way that, you know, the corporate media functions. So you can't rely on them for information, reliable information about what's really going on in the world, sort of a distilled package view, so you can act like a rational human being. It's there to terrorize you. To fear, even now, how they cover cases and hospitalizations and these things, they're confusing cases with people who are sick, when cases are just positive tests, and then one report you read how positive tests are 90% false positive, then you're supposed to worry about case numbers going up. But if case numbers are positive tests, and the positive, and there's a false positive of 90%, then you shouldn't be worried about the cases because it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Yeah,
Right. Well,
it's like,
I mean,
and that's even reported like in the New York Times. You know, we reported it, but then you contradicted the next day with the headlines. Or you on one day in April or May, you the whole front page is devoted to names of people supposedly died from COVID-19. Right? Remember that when they posted all the supposed death notices? But all this fear again is to justify the continued lockdown and to destroy the economy, to bring about this fourth industrial revolution that Klaus Schwab talks about in his book. I think it's titled The Fourth Industrial Revolution or something. And this, of course, this was foreseen even in this obscure government agency, I think called the Artificial. Okay. Yeah, I was saying there's this Whitney Webb wrote an article about this, how in the, I've mentioned this before, I think it was the National Defense Authorization Act of 2013 or 14 created the Artificial National Security Artificial Intelligence Commission or agency. And they wrote about, this is a couple of years ago, they wrote about how in order for America to keep up with China and its artificial intelligence, you have to pretty much copy it and surpass it. And that would be mean doing away with legacy systems like small businesses, retail shopping, personally owned vehicles. And lo and behold, the great pandemic creates these conditions where it shuts down brick and mortar operations, relying digital jobs, online working. The explosion in like with Amazon, and so all this is foreseen, and it was all part of this jargon, the fourth industrial revolution. And you see something like COVID-19, how they talk, the World Economic Forum talks about how this has accelerated the transition into this fourth industrial revolution. And we have to make sure the technologies in the digital, biological, and physical world remain human-centered and serve society as a whole. Okay, fine. But it's, I mean, it's pretty clear that the fix is in with these folks, that they've been involved in not only in perpetrating being involved in perpetrating this fake pandemic, global fear, economic lockdown, and they're in a position now because they represent the interests that they want to impose this new order. It's based on this great reset where you do away with currency, social credit system, constant monitoring, biosecurity monitoring, constant fear, viruses. Everyone's socially atomized because we can't get together anymore. We can't get together in groups and discuss these things. This is a destruction of all that makes life pleasant, makes it worth living, because you can't have weddings, you can't have funerals. These things are important to people. You can't gather together. You can't have cultural events, music. What about orchestras and music? They can't, none of this bring, but none of this, in the mind of Klaus Schwab, if it doesn't have any sort of economic quantification, it doesn't have value in a mind like him. If you read some of his writings. So it
Well,
can all
even
go
worse,
away.
if you're a human being with the activities that you were describing that give value, you're an opponent to Schwab because you don't fit. Your self-interest is in violation of the group principle that he uses, on these large scale programs, that the greater good for society. Yes, there's some compromises, meaning. You can't talk to anybody, but if there's order, there is no more chaos. So, this is just sophistry. It's, I mean, I don't think they believe the argument, of course. They're just using it as propaganda to keep us beaten down. But my question, Tim, is they really can't, at least with that current technology, as far as I know, extinguish our memories. And so the problem here is that they're trying to transition into this zombie technologic slave state. But in doing so, they're creating millions of individuals who are aware of exactly of what's going on. What can they do with these individuals? Because they're certainly not going to accept the zombie technological slave state. So this is a very interesting time because, your every day that the lockdown is incomplete. I mean, you can see they're in a process. They want to take it to an ossified, completely electronically structured world. But they're so far away. I mean, there's just you'd have to, I would say even the vast majority of mankind is not wanting to do this. And more people are starting to suspect government of malevolence. So, what do you think, Tim? I mean, what are they actually planning for this group, the people involved in what can be seen as like independent thinking and independent media?
Well, I think they think they can destroy the economy and make everyone so desperate that people will desire some sort of reset to be put on the dole. There is a document that I saw. I don't know if it's genuine or not, but it's interesting. I came across this listening to a program called Computing Forever. It's a YouTube program. Guy out of Ireland does it. And he read this. Apparently, document is leaked out of the Canadian government. Is this leaked info really Trudeau's crazy COVID plan for 2021? You decide. Posted by Canadian Report. COVID restriction 19 restrictions. LPC Strategic Committee leak. It reads: I want to provide you some very important information. I'm a committee member within the Liberal Party of Canada. I sit within several committee groups, but the information I am providing is originating from the Strategic Planning Committee, which is steered by the PMO. I need to start off by saying that I am not happy doing this, but I have to. As a Canadian, I have more. I, as a Canadian, and more importantly, as a parent who wants a better future, not only for my children, but for other children as well. The other reason I am doing this is because roughly 30% of the committee members are not pleased with the direction this will take Canada, but our opinions have been ignored, and they plan on moving forward toward their goals. They've also made it very clear that nothing will stop the plan outcomes. The roadmap and aim was set out by the PMO and is as follows: phase in secondary lockdown restrictions on a rolling basis, starting with the major metropolitan areas first and expanding outward, expected by November 2020. Rush the acquisition or construction of isolation facilities across every province and territory, expected by December 2020. Daily new cases of COVID-19 will surge beyond capacity of testing, including increases in COVID-related deaths following the same growth curves expected by end of 20, November 2020. Complete and total secondary lockdown, much stricter than the first and second rolling phase restrictions, expected by end of December 2020, early January 2021. Reform and expansion of unemployment program to be transitional into a universal basic income program, expected by quarter one 2021. Projected COVID-19 mutation and/or co-infection with secondary virus, referred to as COVID-21, leading to a third wave, with a much higher mortality rate and higher rate of infection, expected by February 2021. Daily new cases of COVID-21 hospitalizations and COVID-19 and COVID-21 related deaths will exceed medical care facilities capacities, expected quarter one and quarter two of 2021. Enhanced lockdown restrictions, referred to as third lockdown, will be implemented. Full travel restrictions will be imposed, including inter-province and intercity, expected by quarter two 2021. Transitioning of individuals into universal basic income program expected mid-quarter two 2021. Expected supply chain breakdowns, inventory shortages, large economic instability, expected quarter two 2021. Deployment of military personnel into major metropolitan areas, as well as all major roadways to establish travel checkpoints, restrict travel and movement, provide logistical support to areas expected quarter three 2021. Along with that, provided roadmap that the Strategic Planning Committee was asked to design an effective way of transitioning Canadians to meet unprecedented economic endeavor, meet an unprecedented economic endeavor, one that would change the face of Canada and forever alter the lives of Canadians. What we were told was that in order to offset what was essentially an economic collapse on an international scale, that the federal government was going to offer Canadians a total debt relief. This is how it works. The federal government will offer to eliminate all personal debts, mortgages, loans, credit cards, etc., which all funding will be provided to Canada by the IMF, another globalist institution, under which will become known as the World Debt Reset Program. In exchange for acceptance of this total debt forgiveness, the individual will forfeit ownership of any and all property and assets forever. The individual would also have to agree to partake in the COVID-19 and COVID-21 vaccination schedule, which would provide the individual with unrestricted travel and unrestricted living under a full lockdown through the use of a photo identification referred to as Canada's Health Pass. Committee members asked who would become the owner of the forfeited property and assets in that scenario, and what would happen to the lenders or financial institutions. We were simply told the World Debt Reset Program will handle all the details. Several committee members also questioned what would happen to individuals if they refused to participate in the World Debt Reset Program or Health Pass or vaccination schedule. The answer we got was very troubling. Essentially, we were told that it was our duty to make sure we came up with a plan to ensure that that would never happen. We were told it was in the individual's best interest to participate. When several committee members pushed relentlessly to get an answer, we were told that those who refused would first live under lockdown restrictions indefinitely, and that over a short period of time, as more Canadians transitioned into the debt forgiveness program, the ones who refused to participate would be deemed a public safety risk and be relocated into isolated facilities. So as you can imagine, after hearing all this, it turned into quite a heated discussion and escalated beyond anything I'd ever witnessed before. In the end, it was implied by the PMO that the whole agenda would move forward no matter what we agree to, what we agree with or not, that it won't just be Canada, but in fact all nations will have similar roadmaps and agendas, that we need to take advantage of the situations before us to promote change on a grander scale for the betterment of everyone. The members who were opposed, the ones who brought up key issues that would arise from such a thing, were completely ignored. Our opinions and concerns were ignored. We were simply told, just do it. All I know is that I don't like it, and I think it's going to place Canadians into a dark future. That was posted on October 14th. So, I don't know if the dates are going to be right on that. I don't know how accurate that is, or just fear porn. But there are a lot of indications that they're trying to move in that direction, at least. So I can't dismiss it.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, if they're not moving there, why are we going through the lockdown at all?
Yeah, why Victoria? Why Ireland? Right. Yeah.
Right. So I would say that
they're halfway there already.
Yeah. I mean, in some of the areas, there it seemed to be doing tests to see how the rebellion is controllable. But in general, they would never, as far as I can tell, they would never have taken this step with the idea that they would, you know, go back to the old way of living at some point with the new understanding of human nature that they gleaned through the lockdown. I mean, this is part of a well-thought-out process that we're in. And it certainly is going to end up in a slave state one way or another if we cannot find a way to defeat it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that simple. I think that there will be fits and starts. You know, it won't necessarily be as smooth as the document that you were reading from. But I would say the philosophy the document represents, regardless of whether or not it actually is reflects legitimate political discussions, it's true. Just it's self-evident that it's true, isn't it? I mean, there's no other reason to do something as stupid and as economically and as morally and psychologically destructive as the lockdown if you weren't going to try to transition all of the population into subhuman drones. I mean, think of the damage they've already done. Think of it. Think of how many millions of people have either died or gone into abject misery because of this artificial lockdown. When you read the fact that the virus itself is a CGI event that they perfectly well knew was the case, there really isn't any other way to look at this rationally. We are in the process of the secret society that has slithered into the political class and controls it. wants to ossify their power, and they're using this moment to and the excuse of the pandemic to set up structures in which we cannot rebel, and in which we can be conditioned, just as in the document you're reading from. So it's up to us. We should be, I think, well aware of where we are in the process at this point. I mean, anyone who listens to the independent media should have been skeptical in March, and now should be in full throttle rebellion, because we are being destroyed one day at a time. And so if we're going to resist, first we have to get through the insanity month, I think, that's coming up, which, you know, I'm odd that it hasn't actually blown up any more than it has, but let's hope it doesn't. But in any case, the pandemic will go on regardless of the outcome of the election. It doesn't matter if Trump or Biden win. The process that you described will be going forward in one way or another. Every single thing in that description will be attempted to be implemented, if on that timeline, on a longer timeline, or even on, perhaps on a shorter one. But it is, they are going to try it. They wouldn't have taken us here if they weren't going to try to go there.
No. And you can see that in the political debate, electoral politics, where there's talk about this coronavirus relief bill, and the debate should be $4 trillion or $2 trillion or $1.8 trillion, and no one is really vigorously debating whether or not people should be allowed to go back to work, but they're debating about just creating another $2 trillion and giving it to people.
Yeah, about how much government basically control over cash of the American people, is the right number. That's all they talked about. Mm-hmm. So you could see in the debate, I'm at the point where I don't really feel that I need to watch those things to get a sense of it. I am convinced as to what is in fact occurring. And so debate is just theater. It's just there to create the impression that there's something meaningful about the dialectic so that we're passionate about the outcome. All that really matters is that we understand where we are in this process. We don't need
to... One thing I face, I get a lot from normies. People have their head in the sand or up somewhere else. And not if, you know, they sense something is wrong, but they still see it in the right left, you know, paradigm. Yep. Stupid liberals. Oh, you know, it's Trump, you know, whatever. If you talk about something like the scamdemic, the plandemic, the false pandemic as an operation, and you start to lay out the schematic, the relationships, connections, and networks, and these things, and, you know, make it factual basis, the skeptical will go, something like this can be coordinated. But then if you look at something, take us back to our primary topic of the evening, something like the World Economic Forum, this is precisely how something like this would be coordinated. You get people in industry, you get people in finance, you get people in government and entertainment, you get people, you know, in medicine or in the health industry and government, and you coordinate this something and you give them their marching orders or general idea. And then this can happen over the course of several years, as apparently something like this did, because we had the lockstep document, the Rockefeller document, 2010. It's 10 years ago, a decade ago, predicting this very thing. And it happens, but this is how conspiracy, you know, if we may use that word, can be implemented, can be acted upon, and this is a conspiracy. It's a vast conspiracy.
Exactly, it is a conspiracy. We have to think with the power of there isn't any question about whether or not it's a conspiracy. There was an article, I think it was yesterday, the day before, in the New York Times. It was about QAnon. And it was using QAnon as an example of how ludicrous conspiracy theories are in general. And so you could see the function of QAnon as part of the propaganda, that it just creates a straw man, you know, just an obviously bogus, way of looking at the world, and with no factual background, with an anonymous individuals, you know, they don't really know who's in charge of it. So it makes the people who believe in conspiracy theory in general look ridiculous. This is the point of it. To make any progress with the rebellion, you have to be beyond that kind of criticism. You have to be beyond whether or not QAnon is real. It's irrelevant. All that matters is, you know, organizing people that you know and inputting information about the nature of the, what we can see about the secret society and about where they are going to take us, and putting out the question and the directive to every single person that can understand what you're saying. How do we fight back?
Well, one thing is that, you know, there's lawsuits challenging the factual basis of the pandemic, of the health emergency itself.
Yes.
And it can be factually established that there is no genuine health crisis or pandemic. And then you go from there. Wait a second. Then how did this come about? Well, they faked it, and they hyped up fears. They produced hundreds of thousands of false death certificates. You have people like Fauci and Dr. Birx and various governors and mayors and representatives of the administration talking about this. And of course, and you can make the connection of many of these people back to Event 201 and back, which ties in the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, dozens of NGOs. So there is a network that coordinated this to create this mass hoax, which is a great crime. It's a crime of the century, if you will. And it's there. Yes. It's malfeasance. It's fraud, you know, and there are laws against this malfeasance in office. And I know there are legal mechanisms where grand juries can be impaneled to investigate this stuff. So yeah, getting it out that it is fake, that it is fraud, can empower people to actually call for an investigation where if we had sovereign governments, they'd go in and they'd raid Davos next year and arrest all the SOBs that are there, arrest the ringleaders, go in and seize the funds of these various NGOs, seize the funds of the Open Society Foundation, go after George Soros' assets, Bill and Melinda Gates' assets, because they're all part of this criminal conspiracy. And then you can get restitution, because you can tie their assets and pay off all the businesses that were destroyed. Because everyone's going to – you're talking about a global class action lawsuit against the global elite. You know, they're kind of hidden to in Germany, that lawyer in Germany.
Which is actually kind of what they are trying to do.
Yes.
In Germany.
That's what people have to be aware of. This thing is a global, and they admit it. They're admitting this. And the other side of this, they're talking about doing away with all these businesses and all that. What about all the surplus millions that rely on the current economic system for their sustenance? Well, you know, there's the Georgia Guidestones, if you want to get grim.
Well, if you want to, you know, come up with a plausible conjecture, there's a Georgia Guidestone. That this is part of what they're doing. I think it's almost axiomatic. I just think that the idea that because I had asked earlier about, well, what are they going to do with all the people whose memories of freedom and who are aware that the virus was a hallucination, a computer construct? That what can you do with this group? Well, all you really can do with them is destroy them.
Yeah, what you do is you say they're public health threats, and you put them in isolation.
So you see, between here and there, before we're locked up, is the question as to, well, okay, then what can we do right now?
Well, how you stop it? You stop it when a cop shows up with some dumb fat cop shows up with a mask on his face, asking, well, there's more than 10 people in the house, tell them to go to hell. And if they do come in and arrest you, you sue the hell out of them.
Well, you have to fight.
You can't fight back.
You know, it's like we were talking last week. I mean, the one thing that we need to start doing is not complying.
Yeah.
I just cannot underline this fact too strongly, is that in every little way that your life creates this opportunity to not comply, and particularly to publicly not comply, we just have to start doing it. I mean, there will be people who are ridiculed. There will be people, jobs lost. I mean, you know, I don't know, all sorts of things that will be unpleasant outside anyone's comfort zone will occur. So what?
I mean, well, it's like if they see you not wearing a mask and you appear healthy and you look somewhat intelligent, that may inspire 10 more people to say, hey, I don't have to wear a mask either. He doesn't look like he's an idiot. You know,
exactly. This is exactly right. And this is what we have to do, is we have to whenever there is there are these little moments that come up, even though they may seem trivial, if enough people are doing them, if enough people are rebelling in that way, the mind control doesn't work, and we can make the entire population aware of something that demonstrates that there is a secret society.
I've seen how that this can work, because in my line of work, I'll meet with people, and they'll come out, and some they'll meet me, and they'll be wearing a mask, and I'm not wearing a mask, and I won't wear a mask. If they want me to go inside, I will, because it's, you know, because it's their property, but when I'm outside, no, and within a few minutes talking to them, they take the mask off.
Yeah. Exactly. But you know, look, Tim, what we have is the greatest opportunity that the independent media and the European has ever had to create awareness of the real conditions that we live under. This is the greatest. If we had, you know, if you and I had sat and go, well, what can we come up with to get people to see that we are slaves in a system and we don't know it, right? The COVID is so stupid and it is so self-evidently untrue that it's just about as good as we could ever have imagined if you and I had created it.
Yeah, that's perhaps a blessing in disguise.
And it's that stupid. So, and it is so obvious that it could never exist if there wasn't malevolence inside the political system. When it's like you point out in the debate, when you hear Biden and Trump fighting over one another about who can arrange to have more money from the government, and neither of them are talking about, well, what about the small businesses and the jobs and the loss of freedom? I mean, when they only focus and argue over the one aspect which the oligarchs are, you know, desirous to have, you know, be put into our minds, then you see it's just clear they're both just propaganda devices. And the struggle between them is just part of the propaganda device, you know, just like QAnon. So we have a great opportunity. This is not a time to have any discouragement. This is the time when we've been given the tool. And the tool is the virus, the fake virus, the CGI. Cowan's article is really critical, I think, because it just does a very clear job, it can go, it's not science-y, it can go pretty far down into the population. The public will start realizing, wait a second, you mean they don't actually have the virus? You see, once the ludicrousness of the position that the government is taking vis-a-vis the virus comes about, once people start seeing how ridiculous it is, it's the next step. It's inevitable that they realize that this wasn't stupidity, it wasn't panic, it was an attempt to destroy freedom. That's what it was. So this is the greatest opportunity we could ever ask for, is how stupid the COVID virus theory is, the storyline. So we have a chance. And, you know, let's face it, the independent media is making strides. That's why they, you know, I think that's why they're going to be hammering it so hard over the next, you know, couple months as they try to take the lockdown further. But you'll see, I'm pretty sure you'll see that, you know, the new flu season will emerge, and the COVID numbers will start to amazingly go up. And there you'll be with a new lockdown. You know, they'll start implementing all of the stuff you were reading about in that supposed report from the Canadian politician. So we have to fight back.
Yeah, you know, Fauci can't. Playing the role of Grinch.
It's not gonna be much of a Christmas, is it?
I mean, it's like kind of Thanksgiving, but yeah, I was listening to John Waters, the Irish journalist. He was talking about this is how a situation like this is pretty much an opportunity for greatness, and he's not being grandiose. He's saying that this is the chance. The point you were making is for individuals to stand up and actually fight for freedom. And fight this beast, fight that hideous strength that is the beast system that we're confronted with now. It's there.
Exactly.
Fangs are now bared. It's there. You can't deny it.
We can see it now. We can fight it because it isn't hiding anymore. And this is, we can attack it.
Yeah. So now it's an opportunity to actually step up to it. And whereas otherwise We would have been consigned to just mediocrity in our relative comfort of the system, and now we've been forced to make a stand. And this is how these things go. And
Yeah, and we can make a stand against the jackboot thugs that they use to keep us silent and from talking to one another, and we can make a stand in the our communications to just keep making more and more people aware. You know, wake the heck up, people. This is a fake virus. It's being done just for the purpose of enslaving you. The lockdown is not for your benefit, it's for your destruction.
Take the mask off, turn the brain on. So,
Yes, sir.
okay, Joe. Okay,
All
Joe,
right,
take it
have a
easy.
great week. I'll talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.